Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm back with Buck Woody. We're talking about building from the right end your application, and we're talking about data storage, application architecture strategies, and now we're going to talk about how we can implement some of those using the Azure technologies. Buck, thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you, Jerry. It's good to have you here. Most of the time I don't get asked back twice. That's a win for me.
Yes. Second date's a real win for a nerd like us, right?
That's what I'm saying. Any date, dude, is a good win. All right. So last time we chatted, we were talking about the fact that I accused you of coding from the wrong end. Remember that?
I do. I knew I was offended, but then you started talking me off the ledge.
Yeah, and we agreed this is not a bad design. Works pretty well for a local system. But then we started talking about maybe there's a new way to do it, and we went through like the different steps. And again, we talked about the fact that it didn't necessarily have to go in this order, but all these things do need to be done. And this lets us begin to break apart the components that allow us to scale. We talked about the pizza example. And so that pizza example, by the way, was actually done on a technology called Windows Azure. Now, Jerry, do you know anything about Windows Azure? Do you know what that means?
I know that out my window there is an Azure sky.
There you go, which means?
It's blue.
No clouds, so don't get me started. Anyway, our cloud product is named for a clear blue sky. So here we go, meaning you're not supposed to even know that it's there. Windows Azure is actually a set of stuff. It's platform.
I love that there is some sensibility to it, that
there
you're
isn't.
Not even supposed
made that
to
up.
Know it's there. Oh,
I just
well.
Hey, dude, right, I have to justify my existence.
That's all right.
All right. So the point is this. It's a big platform, so it does everything. So when people say, what does Azure do? It does everything. So we'll talk about the everythings that it does. We'll do that super quick, and then we'll zero in on data, and we'll bring it back home around how we can use Azure itself to implement some of the patterns we talked about in the last time we chatted. We are in data centers around the world, so we own those. Microsoft owns those. They are owned and operated by us. We don't lease them or anything. And they're ISO 27001 certified, and they've got special audits on those, and there's other things. But the point is, they're big honking, like 9 football fields wide type data centers. They're in geographically stable areas around the world. We own them all over, and we'll talk about how we store your data and so on. But the point is, they're big, and there's always at least 2. They're like a Sith Lord. There's at least 2 of them, right, at all times, so that we can back up your data from one to the other. So everywhere we have them, Europe, Asia, here in the U.S., there's at least 2 of them separated, usually by around a certain number of 100 miles. So that's kind of the way that
Siths always betray each other in the end. Azure.
We don't betray each other. No,
that's
we don't
right.
do that. We would never do that. So then when we talk about Azure, there's a few different modalities. So rather than talk about what it is, because we usually show up at Microsoft and say, here's a product, let's figure out how you can use it and pay us money. what we normally do in Azure is we say, what are you trying to accomplish? Hmm. What's broken? Or what do you need to do that you can't do today? So we kind of flip that around and say, what do you want to do? Sometimes what they want to do doesn't fit on Azure, and I go, good luck, there's another guy over here I can put you in touch with. But when it is something that fits, at least partially, or hybrid way, which we can talk about as well, we begin to talk about the different pieces. And you do end up having to talk about pieces. And so we have 3 big sort of pieces that you can use. We have a virtual machine. So you can just use IaaS. So this is infrastructure as a service. You own the operating system and higher. The interesting thing here is we offer not only Windows, but Linux machines, which is kind of weird.
That's crazy.
We do, and they're running in our data since
first time. Who's the maker of Azure? I thought it was Microsoft. That's craziness. Now, you say virtual machines. That's just where I provision a machine, I remote desktop, or connect to it, and it's all up to me from there.
There you go. You can join that to your domain. You can not join it to your domain. You could expose it to the world. You can not. You can expose it to both your domain and the world. Lots of options there. We have SQL Server, SharePoint. These things are kits. You just click a button, and it builds, or it's running on standard everyday old Hyper-V, so you can actually build one locally, run it there, and then bring
it
back.
And just upload it. Oh, beautiful. Oh, can I upload one I built locally as well, right?
There you go.
Fantastic. Save me a lot of time.
Yeah. And you could even sysprep it and then put it up there, and then click a button and have your own little gallery where you can build your own systems. So
nice.
Dev work, HADR, all kinds of scenarios that fit inside a virtual machine. But you own the operating system, so you got to patch it, you got to manage it, all that.
And from a scalability point of view, if I want to scale it, I need to go provision another one, get those babies talking to each other. It's certainly not automatic.
It's not scale out. You know, you're going to get a certain size of it, and it's not even super huge. It's not meant for scale up, but it has you have to figure out your own scale out. That's on any IaaS, whether it's us or somebody else.
That's right.
Then you move to the opposite end of the spectrum, and we have these things called Azure websites. And here you're abstracted not only from the hardware, but from the operating system itself as well, and even the layer underneath the operating system of like IIS or some other like Apache. So if I want to run a PHP website or an ASPX website or a WordPress, I click a button, I get one, and I'm literally as if I'm on a web server and I'm just dropping in web pages. You can publish to that from Visual Studio, WebMatrix, Notepad, whatever, right? It's just loaded there and off it goes. And then we have this other paradigm called
PaaS. And now that second one, the you would never remote desktop into, right? Because that's handled by somebody else. This is really meant to be as easy as possible, so all you do is think about the one thing you're doing, your application that sits on top.
If it's web-based in that case, just pure web-based. Now, the interesting thing is everything I'm describing can talk together or not. You can actually talk to only one thing, or you can talk across multiple ones, and we'll come to that in a moment. The next one is the one which is called Platform as a Service, or PaaS. And what this does, you get rid of the operating system, but you get rid of the runtime as well. So .NET's laying down. You can lay down Java or whatever you want to run within that space. And from now on, you just throw code to it. So this is the way a developer treats a computer system anyway.
Yeah,
in other words,
that's right.
There's hardware, but they don't deal with it. There's an operating system. They don't deal with it. They call up IT and say, where do I publish? I've just written some code. Where do I deploy it? And they right-click and deploy to that server. Same concept. But the difference here is in code, this is what's beautiful. In code, I can tell this thing, which underneath is a VM, but you don't have to care.
That's right.
Underneath,
it's transparent to me. Yep.
It should be. And the whole point of this is I can throw the code out there, and in the code I can say, if I get busy, and you can define what busy means,
right?
Make another one of me. So I can literally have it do the whole Sorcerer's Apprentice and split the broom in half, and there's another one. And you can say, if I get busy, make another one of me. And it splits more and more and more and more. And you can also say, if I'm not busy, kill myself.
Yeah, or let's say decommission.
Sure, whatever. Assisted suicide. So it allows itself to decommission off of the system, and that allows it to grow. Do you remember the pizza example we talked about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so Super Bowl Sunday, tens of thousands of compute nodes of power, that's what they got. All in code. As people started ordering, the system, and busy was defined as response time to the client. And it said, hey, if it gets busy and I don't hear back from that guy in a little bit, go ahead and make another. But if I'm fast, I'm super fast, and I'm not waiting, kill myself, kill myself, kill myself. And back it comes down to a smaller size. So
yeah.
It literally sort of breathes. It's the most amazing thing to watch these things spin up and then spin back down.
So now, in that spectrum you were talking about, where you began was the most work for me, really, right? I'm going to manage everything, not just my app, but the operating system and everything else. Scalability is probably at the lowest if you were looking at that. And as you go across, the work for me goes down, and scalability certainly goes up, right?
Yeah.
Not just scalability going up, but as you were saying, scalability going down, so there's not wasted capacity.
Exactly. And the neat thing is you write that code one time. And then it will scale. You don't have to go write another thing of code for it to scale. That scale's built in. So it just happens. And you get to set ceilings and floors. I mean, it's not going to run away with, because you're paying for this, right?
Your $6 million bill at the end of the month,
theoretically, you're getting paid, though. I mean, that's the whole reason you do this. The reason you add another cashier to the front is so that people don't put their packages down and go to another store.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So you add another cashier, add another cashier, add another cashier. When it gets busy, take a break, take a break, take a break, right? That's the way real life works, and that's the way this works. We have other components. Now, you can serve this back out anywhere, meaning that it could be internal. It could be to your users that are working in your company but not in your building, like the pizza has got a franchise, or it could be your customers, or interestingly, all three at once. So I could have the same widget run and get the orders from that store and then compare it with the business intelligence that I keep internal that I want to keep private.
Of course.
And maybe the costing piece, maybe where I take your credit card, maybe that goes off to the user doesn't know, single pane of glass. So they click a button and it orders the pizza and then it goes off to the check paying system, which has always been secure. That's what they do today. And it comes back and tells the Azure system approved or not approved. Meanwhile, all that data is flowed back. So I have a full hybrid going on here, all in code.
Nice.
And all of these things can work together or separately. Now we've got other pieces. We've got a service bus. We've got security as a service and other things that you can do. And then this is where we get to sort of the meat of what we were talking about in our last discussion, the different kinds of storage that you have. And so I'll drill in on these a little bit more in a bit. But more important to note is that these things can certainly work together. A VM role might be running a Unix or Linux program that I've written. A website might be doing some light BI analysis. A web role might be taking an order from a client from their phone. I might be using a service bus to transfer. I need more flour. We need more gas for that truck, whatever. I might be using security, and then I might be using the data altogether. Or I could just have the system directly attached to that storage and do a backup from on-premises out to Azure, which
Nice.
Keeps the data in multiple places. This can all be happening at once, or I could just be using one of them. I've got companies that do nothing other than use storage. All they do is mount a drive, copy some stuff, and get off. They just want to replace their tape system. Works fine. And then later, when they want to do something with that data, they actually can start writing code against it. It all mixes. It all works together. Yeah. So talking about the security side, we also even have a provider that will allow you to let the person's authentication be trusted in your Azure app. So for instance, if I create a site today and I've got users coming in from all over the world, how do I handle security? I make them log in, I make them get a name and password and go through a CAPTCHA. It's a mess.
Yeah.
What if they're already a Facebook user or already a Google user or already Live ID or Yahoo or Active Directory? What if they've already got that?
Yeah.
I've got a code widget I can drop into my Azure code that says, I'll accept claims from Google if this person logs in with them. If Google says they're Buck Woody, they're Buck Woody. And it will swallow the claim. And here's what's interesting about that. How does that work? The code shows up, knocks on the door, and says, Buck told me to get his green jacket. And my wife says, who are you? Well, Buck said that you would give me his green jacket. That's the claim.
Yeah.
So she picks up the phone and goes, hey, Buck, who's this guy? And I'm like, oh, yeah, just give him my jacket. She doesn't have to know him. She doesn't have to have his background. She doesn't let him do anything else. She just hands him the jacket. It's called claims-based authentication, and it's the only way for your security to scale unless you want to handle it.
And it's the reason you get so cold in the winter. I mean, to be honest, she gave that jacket.
Yeah. Well, we're using fiction here. I said I had a friend, that kind of thing. So, we're out of reality here a long time ago. All right.
To your point, though, I mean, even from using security like that, claims-based is so common today that the idea of a developer or a DBA or somebody like that storing a password, it's much more uncommon than it ever was before.
And I don't even like it, because when's the last time you heard somebody getting broken into, right? It's constant. It's constant. And I hate it. And I don't want them keeping it. We've done a lot of work to keep my Active Directory name and password safe. Stop recreating the wheel and opening up another hole. So we have choices. Now, one of those choices is a relational database. It's what we're used to. It's good. It has ACID properties. I do like relational databases. I worked on the SQL Server team here at Microsoft for a while and delivered some of SQL Server 2008. So I'm very familiar with the space. Love it. Been a DBA for years. So I love that. DBA meaning default blame acceptor. if anything's wrong, raise your hand. It's probably the database. All right. So we have two choices that we can work with in Azure. The first is that we could spin up a VM role that we talked about, and we could put SQL on it. You have full up SQL Server. You have all the features. You have all of the everything. The performance is not going to be the same as what you'd buy on premises. That's just, you're in a co-mixed environment. It's not going to happen. And there are some things around keeping it up to date and your HADR. These are things that you're going to have because you own the operating system. You could also throw up a Linux role and put something else on that, like MySQL or something else. That works just fine. And again, you have to check with whatever vendor that is to make sure it's a supported environment. If you're going to throw some other, you know, relational platform out there, you got to make sure they'll support it because you're on your own here because you own it.
Yeah. But again, and now this is a common scenario, right, where I go out, provision a machine, install SQL on it, and start using it as if it's my database in the cloud.
Yeah, and I get nervous about that from on-premises merely because of the latency and these chatty apps. But it's perfect for cloud-based code. Now, we have another option. We have something called Windows Azure SQL Databases or Windows Azure Databases, and it used to be called SQL Azure. And you'll actually see that icon in here in a bit. But the point is that what this does is drops you off at a database level. So you're right at a database level. You're not at the instance. You're just at a database. And we make three copies of it at all times for you, and we mirror that to another data center, geographically different, but geopolitically the same. So it stays in the U.S., Europe, or Asia.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the relational choices, but we've got other choices.
Wait, well, let me make sure I get you, though. The difference between VM with SQL Server and Windows Azure Database, my SQL Server on a VM will scale up to the edge of my VM and no bigger.
That's right.
See, my Windows Azure Database will scale to the edge of the universe, I suppose.
Well, what it will do is it's still on an instance. It's a mixed instance. But the point is when you have different databases, because that's normally the way you break it out, they're going to be on different instances more than likely. And so you'll scale because of that. It would be like buying multiple VMs, that kind of thing. But it doesn't scale at the database level, no. But it does scale across when you have more than one database. It's the way that works.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. The next thing we have is a queue, and the queues aren't super interesting to talk about. They're a queue, and what that means is you can put a message on them from a worker or web role, and then another worker or web role could wake up and take it. So we've got our front end that's the web page. It could lay down some of the information that needs to be worked on for the pizza, and then another worker role comes by and scrubs that, grabs the work, processes. Now I can begin to put data next to compute. Because I can make worker roles that go do work on a particular kind of datum while the web role is freed to take input from the user. That could be something you send up. That could be cookie-based, whatever you want. It's up to you.
Queues, they're the start of asynchronous processing across a system anyway.
They really are.
It's not interesting, but this is a message queue that's across all systems. That's a big deal and not something we've had.
All systems, yeah. This is incredible stuff here. It is a peak mode queue, and what that means is you're allowed to take something out of it, but you're looking at it. It's a read-only copy. You have to turn the lights out if you're done with it. Now, that has advantages and disadvantages. You might want to peak a message more than once, or you might want, you know, that message not to be reprocessed because you get two pizzas at the house or whatever. So you do need to have code that deals with that. Those patterns are well established. We also have blob storage, and this is just binary large object storage. You can put anything in here. And this is where we need to talk about our storage a little bit and how it works. We have three copies of your data at all times in a data center on different what's called fault domains. And those fault domains are different power, different network, and so on. Then we take the entire three copies and copy it again to that geographically separate data center, but geopolitically the same. So every gig is 6 gigs is the way that works.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
that's incredible. When I think blob, I think the normal person, when they think blob, they think image. They think video. Now, what do you think when you say say blob?
Just binary.
Just anything binary.
Yeah, it's literally your hard drive at home. It can hold anything. It can hold text files. I've seen people put huge text files in here. It really doesn't matter. We do have a content delivery network. In other words, more than our regular data centers, we have smaller data centers around the world that will edge out your data, which are great for video type things. In fact, Azure did the London 2012 Olympics, some of the streaming for the video that was online. That was actually done through Azure. The Harry Potter site, Pottermore, that got 110 million hits its first day, is running on Azure.
And the idea of CDN is just that we take the content and get it as geographically close to the user as we can.
That's correct. That is correct. And it's an aged cache, meaning when they quit looking at it, it'll come back. I've got companies using this to deliver their gold images to their salespeople. You know, they log in with a little thing, they authenticate, and it flashes their hard drive from a CDN. It's just, there's just tons of ways to work with this. The sky opens up. So I'm going to move on to the next one. This is the one that's kind of interesting. This is table storage. And this is just key value pair. You have a key, like my record number, and then all the stuff about Buck that I want to store. If you want to simulate a key value pair system in Excel, type a value in cell A1. And then in cell B1, just start entering tons of data separated by commas. That's a key value store. That's NoSQL. You just learned NoSQL here on the radio in 10 seconds.
Wait a minute. I got to let this sink in. So I think the most common misconception is table storage means relational table storage, right? But it doesn't.
No, not in this case. Not in this case. We have relational store that we talked about earlier, but the table stores here are key value pair. And they go up into huge sizes. The interesting things are these are immediately consistent. Sometimes key value pair stores are not. These are. And you can even end up, if you stay in the same partition, getting a transaction commit out of this. And again, I won't go into that. You can take a look at the EF documentation or the link documentation and Windows Azure Table Storage. But that's how you just query it. So I might have this. I see this pattern all the time. So now that we've discussed the different types of storage, I might have this methodology of storage. I might say that I'm going to put anything I search a lot in a relational database. In other words, my attributes that describe my system, the metadata.
So and that you could filter by column, by column, by column, by column.
And I'm just going to index the heck out of it. Every column's going to get an index, every one of them, which normally you don't do in a relational
And maybe
system.
A couple covering indexes too. Got it.
Oh, yeah. Then what I do in that, when the user looks up something, they're hitting that relational store when they click a button. They don't know it. They don't care. They're hitting a relational store. It comes back and says the payload is over in table storage and the video that they asked for is in blob. That's all happening in parallel. And so now that data classification we did way back when we talked in the first session, that data classification now breaks out and here we go. Now we've got a perfect parallel, and the data goes where it's supposed to go. Binary data goes in blobs, table data goes in tables, relational goes in relational, queues go in queues, local data stays local. It all flies together at the client based on what the client's able to do. Phone, I'm not gonna litter that with tons of text. That's video. That's a couple of widgets. Web page, very rich. So I made it on-premises. Where I want to see my secure data all mixed together.
I think that makes plenty of sense, too. I you're going to be searching across a row whose size is actually quite small, right? And that way we can keep it nice and quick. As soon as you need the full payload, point out other things that like blob storage or table storage that can handle massive pieces and just dump them on people. And then you parse it through either your logic engine or the client, right? It's up to you, the architect, right?
Or both. The real problem I see here is how far you carve down the data. So that becomes how atomic do you make it? You don't want to make it by cell, but you also don't want to make it so big that you can't make those breaks. All right, I think we better stop here and we'll chat some more. Why don't we talk about and in the future, why don't we talk a little bit about what do you do when stuff gets really, really, really big?
Really, 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 really big.
Really big.
I like it, Buck. Thanks for talking to us about all the options inside Azure. Thanks for letting us just think like architects for a while about how we take the things that we know and start applying them to applications that are going to scale beyond our wildest dreams.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Buck. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks.